they bought gummy worms? I'm like, do Amish people eat gummy worms? Like, that just seems weird to me.
Well, Amish people can eat pretty much whatever they want.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club. Book
club! For masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this, episode number 143, we are discussing our February, for Valentine's Day, of course, romance issue topic, and the topic is Amish romance, at the request and voting of our listeners.
Yes, it's all your fault.
Sharing the joy with us.
Mm-hmm.
My name is RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, BC.
My name is Matthew. I'm also a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
My name is Anna, and I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, which is located on the traditional homelands of the Nuuvi Southern Paiute people, including the Las Vegas Paiute Tribe and the Moapa Band of Paiutes.
My name is Megan. I live and work on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe, which is also known as the National Capital Region of Canada. And today we have a special guest.
Hi, my name is Tilly. I'm a librarian from Goshen, Indiana, USA, which is on the traditional land of the Potawatomi and Miami peoples, both past and present. I'm a librarian at the Goshen College Library and a cataloger at the Mennonite Historical Library, which is a comprehensive research library that houses texts, images, and media on Anabaptists, which includes Amish, Mennonite, Hutterite, and other related groups. What might be more relevant for this episode is that I am a co-host on the podcast Just Plain Wrong, where I and my fellow Mennonite librarians discuss depictions of Amish, Mennonite, and other Plain groups in pop culture. So that means we read a lot of Amish romance novels. And we review a few other things, too. Just general fiction, movies, music, TV, all sorts of things. We just finished our second season, and you can find it at pretty much all the usual podcast places.
Yay! It's very good. You should all go listen to it.
Yay, yeah. Thanks so much for joining us.
Announcements time. So announcement number one is that I was recently did on two other things that people might find interesting. One is the Podcasters panel, A Glimpse Behind the Microphone, which was a panel discussion I moderated at the Ontario Library Association Conference, which is happening right now as this episode comes out. So if you're attending that conference, you can check that out. And maybe, hopefully, that conversation will be available afterwards at some point. It was a really great conversation between a number of other library podcast folks. And then the second thing is I was on an episode of Downtime with Cranston Public Library, which is a public library's podcast, and I talked about video games, and it was fun. So that also has just come out, so you can check that out as well. And there's links to both of those in the show notes. And now RJ has a book list for us.
So for this episode, as we have done for all of our episodes over the last couple of years, we wanted to include a book list of books by authors of color in this genre. But for Amish romance, we were not able to compile a book list of authors of color.
Or find even one?
Not unless you broaden the category a lot.
Right, yeah. It would not be Amish romance. If we expanded it more, we might be able to get a few titles. But since we're looking at Reader's Advisory and trying to find like things to recommend to readers, I think for Amish romance, it felt more valuable to me to make a list of books by authors of color that are religious romance. So if you have a reader of Amish romance and they're looking for a book where the protagonist is guided by their faith or wrestling with their faith, and you want some diverse options, a book list of religious romances is in the show notes of this episode. It is mostly Christian romances, but I did try to include a variety of religions. So check that out there and at our website, bookclub4m.com.
Thank you, RJ, as always.
No problem.
Also, this is like subtly telling all of our listeners that we will not be doing an episode on religious romance at some point in the future.
Matthew has already ixnayed that one.
This is all you're getting.
We very well may, and I will just have to make a new list. Yep. of you know, 15 new books. I'm sure there's more.
Sure. Okay. In like 10 years, maybe we can do it. There's a lot of other romance genres for us to get through first.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah. There are a lot.
NASCAR romance.
Oh my God.
That's not actually on our genre list.
No.
One of the books my podcast hasn't gotten around to yet is a short novella about an Amish woman who falls in love with a NASCAR driver.
Oh, I love it.
Wow.
We haven't been brave enough to try it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
We will have to bookmark that for our NASCAR romance episode. So I brought up a little intro that I will read for this one. So we read a romance genre every January so that we can release it for Valentine's Day. And because romance is such a huge part of the literary world, that is a lot more complex than a lot of folks give it credit for. And we wanted to make sure we were returning to the romance a romance genre or subgenre somewhat regularly. And I've said in past years that I'm always glad to do these episodes because I feel like I always learn a lot whenever we do a romance episode. For this year, we did a poll. As Anna mentioned, we polled our listeners and the romance genre that they chose was Amish romance. And I was intimidated, but I also felt like, yeah, great, there's a lot to learn. But then I started looking at options and feeling like, oh, I'm way out of my depth. And maybe the main thing that we're going to learn is how much we don't know about this, which is still a valuable thing to learn, but doesn't make for a super informative episode. And I think we were all anticipating feeling some discomfort trying to talk about this genre when we don't really have the cultural context. So I'm so glad that we connected with you, Tilly, and with the Just Plain Wrong podcast, because I feel like I've already learned so much just from listening to a few episodes. I feel like I still don't have all of the cultural context, obviously, and I think me and Megan and Matthew and Anna are still going to be navigating this episode with some blind spots. And I hope that you, Tilly, will feel empowered to correct us if we get anything really totally wrong. But also, I want to say that it's not on you to, like, steer the ship of this episode or be in charge. We are so glad to have you here and have your perspective, and I hope it will be valuable for listeners to have us regular hosts talk about our experience reading this genre as newcomers to it, and that you will have plenty of room as a guest host to share your thoughts and your knowledge on it. And if our listeners want to know more about Amish and Mennonite fiction, Tilly already mentioned, but I'll mention it again. Just Plain Wrong, search it in your podcast app or search the Menobrarians. It's a great podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the first thing I want to say is, like, you know, occasionally I really realize that our listeners really like it when we don't enjoy the books we read. And I feel that's really kind of what drove the poll, the majority of people to vote for Amish romance, is that they're like, oh, I cannot wait for them to have to read, forcing us to have to read these books.
True.
Yeah.
Or you.
Me. Forcing me to have to read these books.
Yeah. You in particular. Yeah. Yeah. Our listeners definitely have a particular fondness of you suffering during these episodes because you suffer so enjoyably, so humorously. Yeah. Listeners don't even know how much humorous suffering occurs because I actually hear a lot of it outside of the podcast.
So, yes, I think there may be some complaining about the things that we read happening, which I'm sure listeners is in part what they came for. But we're also going to try to learn something and have some takeaways.
Yeah.
So the first question is, what is Amish romance?
I guess Amish romance, I would broaden it out to the category and say either bonnet novels or bonnet rippers, if you're feeling like being funny, are any books that are about a plain dressing group of people that have issues of romance and faith intertwined and that have no sex depicted.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I would expect from the Amish romance. And of course, a happily ever after is expected.
Isn't that from every romance, though? Or, you know, the happily for now?
Yeah, but I feel like sometimes you still got to say it out loud. Like, if you have issues of faith and romance and you still don't get your happily ever after, I feel like...
Yeah, it's not a romance novel.
Yeah, some people would have problems with that being labeled as a romance, is all.
It still gives a surprising amount of space, because I suspect as we go through the descriptions of what we read, we're going to find a lot of differences in the directions they took this, because I was fascinated by the directions, the way that the book that I read fits into that description, because Tilly gave great description of, like, that was basically, again, for me, what I would have gone into it kind of thinking this was, but, like, I don't think I expected entirely the direction that I ended up in, so it gives space.
I guess one thing it's worth mentioning as well is that these books are not generally written by people from those communities.
Yeah, it's not, it doesn't fall under the own voices category of reading. There's one currently Amish writer of a major publishing company writing today, and that's Linda Byler. And Amish people and Old Order Mennonites and other groups, these people do write and publish, and write and publish fiction even. It just tends to be a lot more limited in its circulation, a lot more dogmatic, or it's all for children for the purposes of teaching morals. It's not stuff that you find on Amazon. So
the presumed audience, I think, for a lot of Amish romance is not for the Amish community.
No, very rarely. You know, there are Amish people who read it, and if you travel in an Amish area, like I live nearby Shipshawana and Middlebury, which are big Amish, I guess, hotspots, you would say. And whether it's all geared towards tourists, I'm not sure, but the books are sold all over the place.
Mm.
And, you know, Amish people read them, sometimes to laugh at them, and sometimes just because they're fun enough. You know, you get people who are really dismissive and people who think that it's confusing and people who love them. So, but it can't compare to the rate of non-Amish readers, or definitely the predominant audience.
Do we want to talk about our background with this genre, which is our next usual question?
Sure. I think my only previous exposure to Amish romance was, I only remember that it wasn't an episode that I was in, but I read some Christmas-related stuff, and I read three Christmas Amish romances, which I enjoyed. The Dawn of Christmas, a romance from the heart of Amish country by Cindy Woodsmall. Snowfall by Shelley Shepherd Gray, and Christmas at Rose Hill Farm, an Amish love story by Suzanne Woods Fisher. But other than that, I don't think I've dipped into this genre very frequently.
I have almost no experience. I mean, none with Amish romance specifically, but with Amish and Mennonite literature and fiction and culture in general, I don't have a lot of background. I have read some works by Casey Plett, a Canadian writer who I love a lot, but I don't want to say she's a Mennonite writer because I don't know if she would identify that way, but she certainly grew up in a Mennonite family and draws from that background in her work, most notably in her novel Little Fish, which is, this is me recommending a book for just plain wrong right now. Little Fish, it's about a young trans woman navigating the revelation that her recently deceased devout Mennonite grandfather may have also been a closeted transgender woman. I own that book, and I've read the first few chapters twice, but I have never actually sat down and finished it, which I'm ashamed to say because I do love Casey Plett, but I'm excited to read that now with maybe a little more insight than I would have had reading it a few years ago. Because, yeah, I really did not have, before starting to do research for this episode, I had very little context. For example, I had heard of Pennsylvania Dutch, but I did not realize it was a dialect of German until, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, it's called Dutch, so that threw me off for a long time until I was, 12. And then I realized that these words that I heard on occasion were, in fact, German.
It's very confusing.
That's actually one thing I did know. Maybe one of the only things I did know. Because many years ago, on a school trip, I visited a Hutterite farm place, community, Hutterite community.
If you were in Western Canada, probably.
Yes. That is where this trip took place. The two things I remember were I didn't go into the slaughterhouse because I'm a vegetarian. I'm like, nope, not going there. And I was very glad about that. And they had German letters that are not used in modern German anymore in their alphabet. Because that was like a sign on a wall. Like there was an alphabet in their schoolhouse or whatever on the wall. And I'm like, what is that character? I do not know that one.
Yeah, I think I was a little embarrassed that I didn't realize it was a dialect of German because I've been learning German for the last 2 or 3 years. And so I was like, oh, I feel like this is something I should have put together at some point.
Yeah, I would say I do also. I'm probably very similar to RJ in this one that I can't off the top of my head / also thinking about this for a bit that I couldn't think of anything that I had read that would match with this genre, which is not to say it's utterly impossible. I haven't touched anything because I will say the thing I remember most is just how many of these materials were located in libraries that I worked at. So I remember putting them on displays and things like that and reading descriptions in order to put them into lists and things like that. But not actually, I can't remember that I actually ever read one of them. Trying to manage this is the endless problem in public libraries. And part of why we exist is you're trying to manage materials that you don't necessarily have a huge amount of experience with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even growing up Mennonite, didn't think to pick any of these books up until about a year ago when we started our podcast. I'd been looking at them for a long time and sort of making fun of them for a long time. And eventually it occurred to me that if I'm going to be working with these books, I need to read them. And some have been more enjoyable than others. But yeah, I mean, where I am, the community, we call them bonnet rippers. And it's in gentle jest, it sort of makes fun of bodice rippers and just the idea that anyone would find this way of life fascinating and romantic, when to us it's way of life that my grandparents' generation, great-grandparents' generation left behind. So we joke about how not romantic it is.
Yeah.
But people find some value in it. So, I guess we have to read to find out why.
When I posted about this in the Reader's Advisory for Library Staff Facebook group, a number of people did say that they have dedicated Amish romance readers in their libraries and that they are still circulating and stuff. I feel it seems like these were bigger a few years ago in that people talked about them more, or maybe it was just people talked about them because they seem so strange and now they're just part of the landscape of romance publishing.
Mm. Yeah, they're really embedded in romance. I've seen tendrils in other directions, mystery, especially cozy mysteries.
Mm.
Are pretty common in Amish settings now. And then you get things like Amish Vampires in Space, which is an actual title of an actual book. And it started off as a joke, and then someone wrote it and published it. And then you get the presence of Amish and Mennonite people in books that are not jokes, but are also sci-fi or, more fantastical. And so there's something about the setting and the way of life that I think appeals to people, but it's still fundamentally successful in the romance genre. I think we need more, like, graphic works.
Hmm.
You know? There's not a lot of YA either. Some YA.
And that's kind of fascinating, because I feel like there would, for certain communities, be an audience and a reason to have those exist and support for, like, YA-aimed materials. Because a lot of what this makes me think of is, like, often the audience is Christian, but not Amish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or among from, you know, any of the people who would, the Anabaptist sort of side of Christianity. But like, so I feel like that there would, within those communities who are kind of the primary audience, be a draw for this as well, specifically aimed at their young adults who are trying to navigate that transition from like childhood into adulthood and dealing with a lot of the complexities of that, which is like a complex process for any of us. So like everybody, no matter who your what your tradition is, needs a certain amount of like support through that transition.
Yeah, I feel like Amish young adult would do really well, because I think one of the only things that I knew, like, as a young person about Amish communities was Rumspringa. I had, like, you know, seen, like, I hadn't watched documentaries, but, like, knew of documentaries about, like, you know, young people deciding if they were going to stay with the Amish way of life or not. And I feel like, yeah, there could very easily be a bunch of young adult novels about young people navigating that, that would appeal, you know, certainly would appeal to a non-Amish audience.
Tilly, when you said you wanted more graphic works, I assumed you meant at first that you wanted more sex and violence in the Amish fiction.
I mean, I was thinking graphic novels.
Yeah.
But, you know, honestly, a little bit more sex and violence could probably, you know, enliven a few of the things I've read. So I wouldn't entirely say no to that either. That's when I have to admit to being a bad Mennonite. My go-to genre when I'm not reading for the podcast is sci-fi fantasy. Just anything speculative makes me generally happy. So I've long had to come to terms with the fact that you can be a pacifist and read about violence, because violence is really interesting.
I mean, yeah. So wait, is our next one, how do we search for it? I don't know why I couldn't figure out which one was next. I think it's because of the pacing is a little different on this. So how did we end up selecting? How do we look for and select something to read for this episode?
I searched for Amish romance in my library system, just like a keyword search. And then I narrowed it down to just the baking ones.
Which is still a fairly large category, I believe.
It was still a lot, yeah. I put a hold on about half a dozen things in my library system that had a pie on the cover.
Archie,
what?
Were you really hungry when you did this, or?
No, I just knew, this is a strategy I think I've used in other episodes for, like, genres that I was not sure I was going to enjoy, which is, like, what is, like, a subgenre within this genre that appeals to me? Like, when we did erotic romance, I also picked one that had food in it. because it's just, like, I don't know if I'm gonna like, you know, how these are written or the relationship dynamics. But if there's food in it, I'm gonna enjoy the parts about food.
Okay, so listeners, what we have learned is that if you ever want to show appreciation, especially to RJ, you need to find a way to provide RJ with food.
Mm-hmm. Send a pie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I will say, food, or I feel like the other thing that I try to look for within the genres that we read is like something gay, something that involves like gay or queer or trans characters. And if I can't find that, then food. So, yes, I put a bunch of holds on things with pies, and then I chose the one that I ended up reading because a few of the others that I checked out were by the same author that Matthew ended up reading this month. So I ruled those out. I thought it was better to cover somebody else. And I did also look for a few books that Tilly had recommended. Forbidden Rumspringa, which is a gay Amish romance, which was not available through my library. I also looked for books by Linda Byler, who is the Amish author of Amish fiction, but my library only had one by her, and it wasn't a romance. I did still check it out, and it was interesting just to take a look and compare, like, the glossary in that one to the glossaries or, like, the use of Pennsylvania Dutch in some of the other books that I found. And just even, like, not knowing a lot, just comparing them was like, oh, yes, one of these feels more authentic, and one of these feels a little bit like some words that you ran through Google Translate. Yes, as far as, though, understanding Amish romance as a phenomenon, I felt like that Linda Byler one wasn't the right fit for this month.
RJ, like, you talk about how much work you did to find things, whereas I just, like, searched for Amish romance and then sorted by new and just picked the most recent one that the library had as an ebook.
It's like you really wanted to feel the pain.
I was going to say, and are you surprised that you didn't enjoy what you read?
There's no way for me to enjoy this genre. Come on.
Maybe there was one in space.
If it's in space, it's not an Amish romance. It might have been. For anyone that wants an Amish romance, if it's in space, they're probably not going to enjoy it.
I guess.
That is true. It might not have been. Yeah. If you want to learn about what readers of this genre are reading, then that might not have been the right selection. Yeah. Matthew generally does not enjoy our romance episodes, I will say. This is not Amish romance specific.
It's so weird because, like, I do occasionally read, like, romance manga that I end up enjoying. And so I'm like, oh, it's not impossible for me to like this genre. Like, I can enjoy it given the correct circumstances. But the correct circumstances almost never happen to me, especially for the podcast.
Someday, Matthew, we have to have a podcast about manga romance so that we can analyze what aspect of manga romance it is that actually is appealing to you when all the rest of this does not work.
A lot of them I don't enjoy as well.
Yeah. So, like, which ones work? Which ones work and which ones don't? Why?
Here's the key thing, I will say. They're a lot shorter to read. You know? Even if they go on for, like, you know, 8 volumes or whatever, like, I can just read one volume and not, like, less than an hour. So that's a major benefit of them.
So I live near a small library system that's in my municipality, and then across the river is a larger municipality, but it's further to go to, but they have a bigger selection. Anyway, so I did a subject search for Amish romance in my local, and they had what appeared to be nothing. I kept coming up against, like, thrillers, books about friendship, kids' books, and I was really confused. And it was because the system, the library system, was assuming that I didn't really mean Amish. What I meant was Emmy, which is French for friend. And there was no way to, like double quote insist. So I had to do a whole bunch of extra filters. And it turns out also they only have 3 books in English that are Amish romance at all. So I borrowed 2 of them. And then I was like, well, what if I don't like these? So I did some, you know, ebook searching, filtering through, because I knew I had really, really enjoyed the one that was about roses and plants. So I was similar to RJ. I was thinking, I'll look for ones that are about, like, gardening or something, really focused on that aspect. Maybe that will be the thing. And I borrowed one of those as well. So that was, oh, and I went to Trashy Bitches. No.
Smart Bitches Trashy Books.
Yes. Thank you.
Love that site.
And they didn't have a ton of Amish romance in their big filtery thing, but I found one of them. So I borrowed one that showed up on their website as well.
So Megan, I think the real reason that the the library systems in Quebec don't have more Amish romances is because the Quebecois people just really hate being called English by the Amish people in these books. I think like being called English is going to just upset so many Quebecois people. For those that are unfamiliar, apparently this is what Amish community people call everyone who is not Amish.
It's true. I have no idea, but I suspect there are no historical Amish communities in Quebec. It doesn't seem like they went more west in Canada than...
Yeah, there are none that I know of. There are Amish communities in Canada that are, I believe, only in Ontario. There are Mennonite communities throughout Canada, but mostly Manitoba and Ontario. And then Hutterite communities also in Western Canada. So if you want Amish, you're probably going to be in the United States. Unless you're living in a fictional Amish land, which is actually quite common.
Oh.
I have to catalog these books. And one of the things I do when I'm cataloging them is flip through them to see where they're located. And if they're located in a real place, I have to enter that in. And there are a lot that just don't exist.
Just can't get it wrong if it doesn't exist in the first place.
Yep, that's true.
Is calling non-Amish people English, like, that is a thing?
It is a thing, yeah. It's usually an Amish thing. In some Mennonite communities, I mean, Mennonites will know what that means, but you have to be pretty plain in order to use that term, because it's mostly a linguistic thing. It implies that you speak German or Pennsylvania Dutch or Plattdeutsch at home, and everyone else is speaking English.
You know, there is like a hilarious sketch comedy thing here, I'm sure, where the Quebecois person keeps referring to the Amish person as an Anglo, and the Amish person keeps referring to the Quebecois person as an English, and they just get really upset at each other.
Yeah, I could see that playing out unhappily on both sides.
Yes, definitely.
So, Tilly, you've read an amount of this. So how did you select for this time?
Oh, man. We started off selecting just by basically pointing at this large spreadsheet of every interesting title we could think of that we knew of.
That's how we picked genres.
So like, we knew that there were classics, you know, like the Beverly Lewis, The Shunning. And we thought, okay, well, we'll have to read that one. But we also knew there were book titles, some Amish title genre books are just horrifically titled. We even, on our podcast, when we have guests on, we make them do the Amish title generator. And you end up with things like The Amish Widower's Secret Space Bride.
That is far too close to the book's title for what I actually read.
Yeah, exactly. You think, oh, these are ridiculous. This is just silly. But they aren't. These books are published. And I assume it's because they want to be found on Amazon and someone types in Amish. So they all have to have the word Amish in there. Unless you're well established. Like if you're Linda Byler or Beverly Lewis, you don't have to have the word Amish in the title. But everyone else has to have the word Amish in the title. So we knew there was a book called Amish Christmas Baby Gone. And we added that one to the list and we read it last year.
That's not even like a sentence like that.
No, that makes no sense.
I was actually about to say I really enjoyed the episode on Amish Christmas Baby Gone. Because it's really fun to say and hear people say.
It was a long time coming. We've been making fun of that one for years before we read it. Yeah. So it sort of depends. We try and shift between books we think are going to be really bad and will therefore have a lot for us to correct and talk about. And then we try to find ones that we do have a better chance of liking. And with those ones, we sort of let ourselves decide based on the novelty of the plot or characters. So one time we were just like, oh, these are all books that are set in our hometown, so we should choose one of those. Or, you know, this one has the same name as me. We should read it. Ugh, God, that was awful. Do not read An Amish Husband for Tilly. Just don't read it. It made me want to cry. It was so just the gender essentialism and the misogyny and the wrapped up as if it was something that we should be aspiring toward. Ugh, just didn't work. So a spread list, a spreadsheet is basically how we just constantly add to it when people give us recommendations. So I'll put Little Fish on there and we'll refer back.
Yes.
Can you really call it a recommendation if you think it's going to be bad?
You know, I think we have a few listeners, like my brothers, who will definitely tell me to read ones that they know I will hate. And they're very sincere in their desire to have me read them. So I call that a recommendation.
Could be a recommendation for a good episode, not necessarily for a good reading experience.
Fair, fair.
That's a good distinction.
Yeah.
This brings back the concept of a reader's adversary that I came up with at some point. Where you're recommending books that you think the patron will actively dislike.
Oh, no.
This is the super villain that we'll have to team up against, isn't it?
Totally. Well, this is also, I think about, like, sometimes there are people whose reviews we follow because we know that they really tend to like the things we don't like. And so you're like, okay, that person really, really liked that one. All right, that means I'm probably not going to like that one. So for me, in terms of how I selected for this month's reading, it actually started off with the fact that Matthew started reading his first and kept complaining about various things to me. And one of the things he complained about, I realized had a lot to do with how young all the characters were. And I was like, well, I wonder if there's a way for me to avoid that. And so I went down the widow route. So I intentionally went and looked for widow, related Amish. So I kind of did the same sort of thing as like RJ and Megan. It's just like pick a topic in an area you think you could do, except it's not because I thought widows were particularly interesting, but rather because I wanted to see if I could slightly age up the characters a little bit.
Were you successful? Because I've run into a lot of widow subjects that are still like under 25 or 30.
Oh yeah, they're still babies. They're still babies, but they were slightly older. I think what I was successful in doing was shifting the nature of the romance, in that it was less focused on the first blush blooming, like, you know, pure romance thing, and a little more of a like mature look at like what a relationship is. And it actually shifted it. Well, I'll talk about like what mine focused on, which was kind of not really romance. It was a romance novel, but it was not about romance exactly. So I'll talk about that.
I think what I said, Anna, was not that the characters were young, like they weren't like 18 or whatever, but that their approach to relationships seemed very young.
Yeah. And it wasn't so much any particular, I wasn't reacting to a specific individual thing you said. I was reacting to your overall comments and thinking, well, I feel like a lot of this is about the youth of these characters and how they're presented in relationship to being quite young and inexperienced in, you know, the process of, I don't know, growing up and falling in love.
Yeah, I kind of spent a lot of my book just thinking like, just f- already. But that clearly wasn't going to happen.
I don't know why you thought that was
wrong genre for that.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, it was like, just hold hands already.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was honestly kind of beyond the scope of this book.
There was a lot of build up to the first kiss in my book. Like a lot. Yeah.
There was no lip on lip kiss in my book.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been looking hard for the last couple of years to find an Amish romance that is more explicit. The gay one that we reviewed for our podcast was explicit. And I was like, okay, that needs to happen. It's part of the identity of these people. But I thought surely everyone loves Amish-themed stuff well enough that someone will take the step and have like a normal romance novel amount of sex in it. You know, like maybe they'll be married first, but then they'll still have sex. But no, I haven't found a single one. It's either like Amazon self-published really creepy erotica or chased nothing, or it's already outside the bounds of what is expected in that it's a gay romance. You know, like there's not any blurring of those lines ever. It's always just fade to black.
So one of my books was just like a collection of novellas. And one of the novellas had, it's not like, I would call it fade to black sex. So not explicit on page sex, but they were clearly referencing it because it was after their marriage and they're like, ha ha ha, let's go back to bed kind of thing. So that is about as sex explicit as it got.
Yeah.
Onto the actual books we read then.
Let's do it.
We're only allowed one each in case Megan read seven or something.
I read two. But one of them was three. So secretly I read four.
Why do you do this to me, Megan?
I like the note of anguish in your voice every time I tell you how many books I've read this month.
Spoken like someone that doesn't edit the podcast.
Megan is just being true to the name of the podcast.
Yep, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Who wants to go first?
I feel like I haven't gone first in a while, so I'll go ahead and go first. Okay, so the book that I read is called The Amish Widow's Secret, which is why I was like, Tilly, that title is getting very close to my title.
It's a secret of baby.
Yeah. The secret Starlight baby. Yeah. Absolutely. It's by Cheryl Williford. I did a little looking into the author. There is almost no information out there about this author. It's really hard to tell. So I don't know much of anything about this author, but there is absolutely no sign or signal that this is in any way an Amish author. So I don't know what they're... I don't have the perspective to know how true to the communities under being represented here this book is. But it's about a woman who relatively new, early into her marriage, her husband dies in a tragic fire in the barn. And she kind of feels guilty because she thinks it might have been her fault because she left a pilot light on or something like that because there were new kittens. Although it's never talked about that the kittens then must have died. I don't know. So I'll get back to this. So it's about her dealing with the fact that they're tearing the barn down and her community is pushing her to sell that house, move back in with her dad and start, you know, thinking about what's next. And she's still in mourning and very sad about this loss. And her father is presented as really not a generous man at all, and is really quite cruel to her. And then somebody from so this is somewhere in Pennsylvania, although I can't remember it actually says exactly where, but somewhere in Pennsylvania. So an Amish man from a Florida Amish community comes to be part of the process of pulling down and replacing the barn. And he has also just lost his wife in childbirth, and he has two small children, and she ends up taking care of his children. And romance, so to speak, blossoms from there. It's really more like it's more presented as in a marriage of convenience to get her away from her not kind father. And because he desperately needs somebody to help with his, you know, grieving young children. Overall, the book is vastly more about family and community and children. Like, it's deeply obsessed with children. Everything is about the health and safety of babies and children at all times, pretty much. There's a lot of indications of various types of abuse in here, but it's not necessarily – it's not – exactly presented as if the community is protecting them, but more that the community doesn't necessarily have space to communicate about the abuse that's occurring within their
their community. And so once it's finally out in the open and recognized, there is actually like, no, that's not okay. Like, you shouldn't be behaving that way sort of stuff that comes up. So there's some weird dynamics in there. Like, the whole shunning thing comes up, but it's sort of immediately dropped. It's not really a thing. And like, it's a little bit confusing. And part of this is because the book's only 224 pages, I discovered, which I borrowed it as an ebook, so I had no idea. I was just like, I didn't even look at that. But that gives me a sense of like why a lot of it felt very rushed, is because it's really compacting in the story very fast. And it's covering a fair amount of ground because, you know, you're dealing with like two people with dead spouses and many small children. And then she turns out to be pregnant from her first marriage, her husband, who is now dead. And so that's the secret, but it's really not a secret. Nobody cares. They're all actually very excited that she's pregnant. Like, it's not like it's all presented as like everything is fine. And it's very much about just like the community healing, the family healing, the children healing, taking care of the family. There is not even a kiss on the lips in the book. He kisses her cheek in the epilogue. And it causes a conversation with the children who witness it, and is it okay with them? Like, that is literally as explicit as this gets. So that is why I was hinting earlier about like it went in directions I didn't expect, because I did not expect this really to be a book about community and family as opposed to a romance. It's really not about their romance. They kind of come, they don't even say, I think maybe in the epilogue she says in her head, I'm not sure she even says it out loud, that she loves him. I think he maybe says it once in an earlier chapter right before she gives birth to the baby that he loves her. But again, I think he says it in his head. I don't think they ever tell each other this in the book.
How romantic.
I know, right? It's so romantic. So like, it's really not about their romance. It's more about like, I would say they come to a place of being at peace with the losses that they've suffered and in support of each other and possibly, you know, developing a positive, like that they're developing a positive relationship with each other. But it's really not, there's no degree of this that's about erotic or romantic love. So I don't know. It was like, largely speaking, unoffensive. There are a few little instances where I was like, ugh. But like, vastly, it was just kind of like unexpectedly all about family. And babies, lots of baby stuff. Like, everybody was having babies. The friends were having babies. The sisters were having babies. Everybody around her is producing babies. And she is producing babies. And she's taking care of somebody else's babies. It's all babies. All right. So that was The Amish Widow's Secret by Cheryl Williford.
It's so interesting. You talked about like the emphasis on babies everywhere. Because in the book I read, I felt that like one of the defining characteristics of the main character was that she wanted to get married seemingly just because her friends were getting married. And presumably like babies would also happen after that because her friends were having babies or whatever. And that's just such like a foreign concept to me.
I think that was the comment that caused me to go down the route I went. I'm pretty sure that was the actual one that inspired me to be like, there's other motivations that I'm curious about, like what it would be like to be in the situation of being a widow or widower within the Amish community and how that's presented within these materials.
Mm-hmm. The other thing you said is that like these books really, when you mentioned shunning, these books really kind of like assume a degree of knowledge about Amish things that are not explained in the books. And maybe that's because I read book three in a series. But it definitely didn't explain what shunning was.
That's odd. In my experience, they always hit you over the head with, like, did you know that this is what shunning meant? Or did you know that Amish people don't have electricity? Just in case you forgot, we thought I'd tell you.
Okay, look, my book, and, like, I have to say, like, my knowledge of Amish people and Amish communities is basically Weird Al Yankovic's Amish Paradise. Like, that's about the extent of it.
Gosh.
But like in my book, the character, like there were multiple times where the characters talked about having zippers and I don't think they have zippers, or like they bought gummy worms. I'm like, do Amish people eat gummy worms? Like, that just seems weird to me.
Well, Amish people can eat pretty much whatever they want.
Okay.
It's less likely that they'll be buying it But I mean, one of the things I like to joke about on my podcast is that people who write these books very often assume that everything is homegrown and canned, and they've clearly never gone to the local supermarket and seen an Amish family checkout with 12 boxes of Velveeta cheese, which is a thing that happens because it's shelf stable. So why not get 12 boxes of Velveeta?
Because it's shelf stable?
Well, maybe the emphasis is on the cheese and not on the shelf stable. It's shelf stable, but is it cheese?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so gummy bears, totally okay. Zippers, maybe not.
The zipper thing, it came up multiple times, and I'm just like, you don't, like, it was pointless. It was just like, oh, they zipped up their sweater. And I'm just like, you can just say they put on a sweater.
Yeah.
Like, why are you bringing attention to this thing that I think makes this book, like, inaccurate? And I'm just like, how much knowledge of Amish communities do you even have? How much research did you do? Because I feel like the answer is not very much.
Unless I was trying to communicate something about the character to be like, oh, this person's not very devout because they've got a zipper.
No, it was multiple different characters, in fact, actually. Oh, that leads to the other thing that drove me mad. I'll just talk about my book now just to complain about it right now.
Yeah, go next.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're
already talking about it.
I read The Coffee Corner by Amy Clipston, which is the third book in some series I don't remember the name of. And it's all about these, they all have like booths in their local farmer's market. And also, like, reading about their booths, I'm not convinced this person has ever been to a farmer's market. just in that, like, the size and setup of the coffee corner that this person runs didn't seem to make any sense for any sort of farmer's market I've been at before, but who knows? So the other thing that just found baffling, if I did like a word cloud of like the word frequency in this book, the two words that would show up the most, I'm positive, are sweetener and creamer. Because every single time the author talks about someone drinking coffee, because they talk about it a lot, because this person runs a coffee stall, they talk about putting sweetener and creamer into it with those words. I'm like, why are you using this terminology? Why don't you say sugar? What? Like, honestly, be specific. Say this person's putting honey in their coffee. It would give them a degree of personality. Because I found the characters in mind the dullest people in the universe. I could not imagine it. It is about the woman who runs the coffee stall and a guy who is works with his grandfather as a carpenter building furniture.
I was going to say, he's either a carpenter or a farmer. Those are your options.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's a carpenter, and he has moved to this community because his fiance died of leukemia. So he's very sad. And she, the first, like, as an ebook, the first 200 pages of this book are just them, like, looking wistfully at each other while he buys coffee once a week in 5 minutes. And, like, she's thinking that she loves this guy. And I'm like, I had a closer relationship with my dentist than you have with this person. You have, like, you know nothing about him. He's like, you're like, he seems nice. Sure, I guess so. He's buying coffee from you. And the main character, like, seemingly has, like, her personality is that she likes to talk to people and is friendly. But, like, I don't know what she talks to anybody about because she doesn't do anything. Like, I'm like, what do you do in the evening? What do you do when you're not in your coffee corner thing, your coffee stall? Like, do you have hobbies? What do you do? There's one reference of her reading a book, and it doesn't say what the book is or anything. It's just like, oh, she read a book. And I'm just like, and that came like 3/4 of the way through the book. And I'm just like, what do these people do? And I just don't understand it. And I'm like, I don't expect them to be like, you know, playing video games or whatever, but I expect there to be some reference to them doing anything to some degree. Anyway, the spoilers, the carpenter guy's grandfather dies and he gets really sad, and so he gets drunk, and then she gets really sad because he got drunk and he's being a bad Amish person, and then he comes back to the church and they get engaged, the end. And like his grandfather was like, his furniture business was doing very poorly, and he refused to like advertise in to communicate with people and to try to sell more of his furniture, and everything gets solved and it's a happily ever after. But I cannot evaluate this book because I'm just so clearly not the audience. And it's also, it's book 3 in a series. And there's a fourth book in the series. So clearly people like this series to some degree. It's from like an actual publisher. And so like, there's a degree of like, I'm like, is this book bad? I did not enjoy it, but like, is it a bad, like, I think it's a bad book, but I cannot even evaluate the quality of it just because I found it so, I don't even know. So uninteresting.
Well, I'm willing to give you my blessing to call it a bad book.
I was going to say.
You could say the zippers went too far.
Excellent. Perfect.
I feel like you were traumatized a little bit by this book, Matthew. Like it broke you just a little bit where you're like, I can't even figure out how to talk about this thing without like, like I can't make an assessment. I just refuse.
Mm-hmm. It is one of those things like it's not impossible for me to like romance novels. I've read, there was that one about the lesbian space station captain and the alien and the marriage of convenience that I read for the podcast several years ago. That one was fun. You know, and nothing has ever lived up to that since then.
So the name of the series is Amish Marketplace.
Yes.
And this is the one I checked out the first in this series. So apologies, Matthew, if I grabbed the first one and you had to go with the third one.
No, it was literally just the most recent one. That's what I decided to go with.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I do wonder if in the first one, more of those like references that you mentioned would have been explained, because the bake shop, the first one that I checked out, does have a glossary. Or does it? Wait, I'm getting my books mixed up. Oh, I know. I have a different Amy Clipston one from a different series. So that one had a glossary.
There was a glossary in the back of the book, which was not very helpful to me as an ebook. But it was just kind of translating the non-English words. That was the other thing that I found so annoying about this book, is that it constantly just slipped non-English words into the dialogue of the characters and italicized it every single time, because it's like, oh, it's not an English word. Clearly you need to italicize this. And I'm like, and I couldn't understand why the author had chosen for the characters to say like caffy instead of coffee every single time. Or like the other one was like the guy called his grandfather like D-A-D-I, I think. And I'm just like, you don't have to italicize that. Like people just call their grandparents weird things. It's fine. There are probably English speakers who call their grandfathers that, you know, like, and it just the formatting of it just really annoyed me.
That's a common complaint of mine. I've gone on several rants. Like, if you're going to bring over a German word, use it for a concept where there's not a good English translation.
Yeah.
Like, Dodi for grandfather, just use grandfather. And the one that always gets me is Gott. Just say God.
Yes. That was in mine all of it, every single time. And I was just like, all right. Yeah.
Thinking about, like, the other thing that I found frustrating was, like, the characters telling each other to pray all the time for like solutions.
Yeah, which is not actually a very Amish thing to do.
Oh, that's really interesting to hear about. But they're like, oh no, like this guy I like is like, I like him and I don't know if he likes me. And her friends are like, oh, you should pray. Oh, he's drinking. You should pray. And it's just like, maybe talk to somebody in real life.
Have a communication instead.
Oh, yep. But that would, you know, dissolve like the majority of romance plots if people communicated, or like fiction plots in general.
It's true. Yeah, that's a general romance problem. Yes. Yeah, where it's just like, if you just talked to each other, this would be a shorter book.
But it is one of those things that I think about, like where like the ending of this book is so, you know what's going to happen. And so like I struggle to understand how people enjoy the journey. But at the same time, I'm like, I've read so many like superhero comics and stuff in the past. And like, it's like, yeah, you know, like Batman is going to punch the Joker and win, you know, and like that. But that doesn't mean that I can't enjoy them. So I'm sure the people that enjoy this book would also think that the things I have read and enjoyed are repetitive and uninteresting as well. So not that every Batman comic is good. There's lots of terrible Batman comics.
That's true.
Is there an Amish Batman comic? Okay, let me do some research.
There are a few Amish adjacent comics. My personal favorite is one called, it's German, and it went for one issue, and strangely, the publishers weren't interested in more. It's about a woman named Kim Luna, who lives in Münster in Germany, which is the site of an Anabaptist rebellion. Before Anabaptists went the route of pacifism, there were some, let's just say, very free thinkers who took over a city, kicked out all the Catholics, forcibly converted everyone, and proclaimed that the kingdom of God had come, and then started marrying multiple women at the same time. There was a polygamy thing going on. Eventually, they all were killed by the Catholics again, and their bodies were hung in cages off the church. So this book is about the ghost of an angry, dead Anabaptist who comes alive and starts terrorizing Münster and can only be saved by Kim Luna, the scientist, and her dog Lovecraft, who will use a magical sword to send the ghosts back to another dimension.
The dog uses it, or the sword?
Yeah, the dog just sort of along for the ride, I guess.
Okay.
It went in a lot of directions.
So I don't really actually speak or read German. I sort of muddle my way through.
Yeah.
But I read every page of this because I was so fascinated. I was like, what is going to happen?
Okay. There's not an Amish Batman, but I have remembered Justice League The Nail, which is by Alan Davis, and is about a alternate world where Superman, when he lands on Earth as a baby, is found by an Amish couple and raised on an Amish community.
Really? Okay, I'm going to write that one down. We don't have that on our list, I don't think.
Well, I'm happy to be on your podcast to talk about this one.
There is a Marvel Universe, there's one of the Punisher's opponents is a man called the Mennonite. He is an assassin who becomes a Mennonite and then becomes an assassin again. But he refuses to use guns because it's okay to kill people with sledgehammers and horses, but not with guns.
Yeah, I've read that comic.
It's a very interesting 5-issue run.
I did also listen to that episode of Just Plain Wrong. So if listeners want to know more about the Punisher Mennonite villain, they can go check that out.
It sounds like you listened to the very best ones, RJ.
Did some highlights, yeah. I will talk about the book that I ended up reading, which was Made with Love by Trisha Goyer and Sherry Gore. It is a writing duo that did this one. It is set in Pinecraft, Florida, which I just looked up today is a real Amish and Mennonite community in Sarasota, Florida.
This is actually where, remember I mentioned that the male lead in mine is from Florida. This is where they're from, and they end up moving back to Florida when they get married. And so the second half of my book was also set in the same community.
Yeah. So Made with Love is the story of Lavina Miller, who has a dream of opening a pie shop. Lavina has 4 sisters named Faith, Hope, Joy, and Grace. And they each seem to have a domestic passion. This is the first in the Pinecraft Pie Shop series, so future installments feature different puns on different sisters' names. I didn't realize Made with Love was a pun on Lavina until today, also.
Oh, totally. I just laughed just now because I was like, what happened? Faith, Joy, Hope, Grace, and then Lavina? And then I realized Lavina Love. Oh, yeah. Okay. Got it.
Yeah. I don't know how common a name Lavina is. It is my first time ever encountering it. It seems silly.
It is a recognizable name.
Okay.
It is often pronounced Lavina.
Lavina. Ah.
But it is spelled about, like, 5 different ways. Mm-hmm. So the regional variation is, you know, regional?
Yeah.
Yeah, it seemed a little heavy-handed to me to have the sisters named Faith, Hope, Joy, Grace, and Lavina.
I'm going to say Levina is the most realistic name out of all of those.
Oh, fascinating.
For an Amish family, naming Amish women after virtues is, I mean, it's plausible, but it doesn't sound, it's not likely.
Especially in English?
Yeah, I mean, my beefs with the way these books work is they sort of assume that if you're Amish, you're a Puritan. So everyone's always named like Chastity and Hope and Prudence, and no one's named like Juanita or Orpa or, you know, like the biblical names that you would find that have no modern references or equivalents. It's just like the names are always tricky. They're often not quite right.
That seems like the easiest thing to get right, though. I don't know.
You would think so.
You would think so. Can I ask, the male lead in mine was named Mose, and I wasn't sure how to pronounce it.
Mose.
Mose, okay.
Yeah, it's a variation of Moses, but
yeah,
you just go straight to Mose.
Mose, yeah. I was thinking that, but I wasn't quite certain, and there was no guide to how to pronounce it, so I wasn't sure.
Sorry, I've just put chastity, charity, and stuff into Google Translate to translate them into German, and like I really kind of wish that they just used the German words for those as the names. Wohltätigkeit. I can't even pronounce it properly.
Wohltätigkeit.
Yeah, that's not going to make for an attractive name for your lead. Yeah.
No, definitely. But that would be so much better.
Yeah, so this one was made with love. Future installments are like planted with hope because the sister named Hope is a gardener, or sowed with joy, or sown with joy because joy sows things. That's the theme. But for Levina, it's pies. She wants to open a pie shop. The male lead is Noah Yoder. He is a young man with a dark past. When he was in his teenage Rumspringa years, he got into a car accident that like drove like into the front of a local business and like destroyed the building. And so years later, he is like making amends by mentoring three rowdy Amish teens and trying to keep them out of trouble by putting them to work doing construction and carpentry work with him. He is a carpenter, which it turns out is one of the two jobs that he can have. It seems like everyone else who has moved to this Florida community were previously farmers and like couldn't run their farms anymore due to like health, and so moved to Florida. Like that is why Lavina's family is in Florida, is because her dad was a farmer, but his health is declining, and so they moved to Sarasota. But yes, Noah is a carpenter. He's got this gang of teens that do work with him, and wouldn't you know it, the perfect venue for Lavina's pie shop goes on sale, and she can afford it with a loan, but it is run down and full of old junk that I guess is just going with the sale. They don't really address the fact that it's like, yeah, you just get to keep all this old junk that's in here. But the cost of renovations is going to be too much for her to realistically open this pie shop. So Noah steps in. Literally, he wanders into the building as she's getting a tour of it. There's a lot of people just wandering into this like closed, not open business building. He just wanders in and overhears this conversation. It must be God's will. He and the teens can do the remodeling in exchange for all of the old stuff that's in the building, because he also like restores and, you know, salvages and restores and sells antiques and vintage things. But Lavina's mom doesn't approve of Noah because she knows about his past, and she's trying to set Levina up with this awful square-jawed bachelor named Thomas.
Oh no, not a square-jawed bachelor.
He's repeatedly extremely rude. Just a short tangent about how much I hated Thomas. He invites Levina on a date, and she's like, I'm actually meeting with my dad tomorrow to talk about this business venture that I've been planning for like years. And Thomas says, I won't take no for an answer. And she says, okay, maybe we can hang out for like an hour. And Thomas is like, great, I will have my friend with a car drop us off at the beach miles from home and leave us there for most of the day. He really sucked. I'm glad he was not a bigger romantic rival than he was. I felt like mostly he was there to pad out some chapters and fill some time. And I guess so, like, a little tiny bit of doubt that Noah and Levina were going to get together. But yeah, I'm glad he was not in more of the book because he was not a good option. There was the romantic tension between Noah and Levina, and there's also pie shop related tension and youth mentoring related tension. Every chapter features a recipe, which I think is on the just plain wrong cliche bingo sheet or checklist.
Absolutely.
RJ, did you make the terrible pie?
I did not make the terrible pie. There was one recipe that I screenshotted and sent to the group because I'm not sure. You know, it could totally be something that an Amish or Mennonite person would make, but it seemed like not a, like, if you're including recipes, not like a stellar example. It was a pineapple pie that was just canned pineapple and instant pudding in a pre-made graham cracker crust, and that's it.
No, thank you.
There's no baking component.
I've seen a lot of cookbooks and Amish and Mennonite cookbooks in my time, and I feel like I've seen pineapple pie, but yeah, never quite that phoned in.
Yeah.
I just love that it's like the pie crust isn't even one they've made.
Yeah, and I feel like for a lot of them, I don't think there was a recipe for pie crust in the whole thing. It just assumes you either had a pre-made crust or that you had your own pie crust recipe and it was just giving you the filling instructions. But yeah, that one was just like a graham cracker crust, assuming you have one. Just you have one around.
I like, honestly, thinking more about this, like, I'm like, is that even a pie? Like, if you're just putting like cold pineapple and cold vanilla pudding into a pie crust, like, is that a pie?
That could be. I don't know. They also are all of the recipes are things that are mentioned in the chapter. And that one in particular, somebody's like, oh, this is the best pineapple pie that I've ever eaten. And it's like, are you sure?
I mean, it could
be. Yeah, but
it could be if they've never had pineapple pie before. That would therefore be the best one they've ever had. Also, maybe the worst. But like,
I just think you don't want to like build up expectations if that's the recipe.
I consider myself like a pie enthusiast. Like I like to bake pies. I like to try odd ones. Like I made an avocado pie last year that turned out surprisingly well. Huh. But pineapple pie, yeah, it's not something I see in bake shops around here anyway.
Hmm. Some of the recipes are also, like, since they're all things that came up in the chapter, a few of them are pretty clumsily included, I felt like. Like, there's one chapter where the characters are at a bank doing real estate paperwork for a whole chapter, and towards the end, one of them has to mention a food. So, like, the dad says, gosh, I'm so hungry, I can almost smell that chicken casserole I'm going to buy for lunch. So just to give an excuse to include a chicken casserole recipe. I do feel like I did like parts of this as a romance. The plot of a woman who wants to start a business and chase a dream and a guy who supports her unequivocally while the other people in her life are more skeptical. That's generally a romance plot that works for me. I feel like that's similar to some of the other romance books that I've read for the podcast. They're were a few romantic moments between Levina and Noah that felt really sweet to me, though on reflection, maybe they wouldn't have if I had a little more cultural context. I'm thinking specifically of he buys her a gift, and it is this vintage Pyrex bowl that she had in her like vision collage of what she wanted for the pie shop. And I thought that was really sweet, that it was really like related to her niche interests, but it could, I did Google this afternoon, like vintage Amish Pyrex. And it could be that that's a total cliche. I don't know.
But I do have a set of Pyrex bowls. But I'd sort of assumed that was just like a, they were really common for a long while and they show up in every antique mall everywhere.
True. Yeah. As far as accuracy, I don't really know how to judge this book. I think the thing that stuck out the most to me as potentially not true to life is that one of her sisters was talking about promoting the pie shop on her Facebook page. She has a Facebook. I don't know if that rings true to you or not, Tilly.
Do you happen to remember if she was Amish or Beachy Amish or Mennonite or Amish Mennonite?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. So one of the authors, Sherry Gore, I'm just looking. It's a member of a Beachy Amish Mennonite church. So I don't know if the characters were the same.
Well, it's definitely possible, especially in Florida. Florida for the Amish, I mean, Pinecraft, Sarasota, is as far as you'll get to like an Amish Wild West anywhere. So it's the place where Amish go to vacation or to retire. And then there are some people who do live there year round. But it's generally a place to relax, to let whatever your standards are, you know, back in Pennsylvania or Ohio or Indiana or wherever, drop. So wear your swimsuit, go to the beach. Mm-hmm. Some of that is very dependent on like what your home region will allow. But there are people who go to Pinecraft and, you know, have smartphones and log into Facebook and then leave it behind when they leave Pinecraft.
Hmm.
And there are some weird loopholes. So like you may not find zippers on people in Pinecraft, but you might find people with smartphones. And if you think that's weird, it's because it is.
That's actually super interesting because that was a thing in mine where they kept talking about how she was from an old Amish community, mm-hmm. and this was not like that when she went to Florida, and they didn't ever specify what type of community this was exactly, other than that they were Amish, but they didn't specify beyond that in any way. But there was like, they had a business van, and so they used that for picking them up because they rode the train to get from Pennsylvania to Florida, and then they picked them up in the van, and then she was talking about like having never been in a van before, and then they had like golf carts that they got around in, and then they had cell phones they used for business. For running their businesses. I don't think anyone talked about Facebook, but there is things like that. Oh, and then the house that they're moving into is a house that – so they – her. I think her new father, like her father-in-law, is like a carpenter in terms of like a house builder. He's a house builder, but he builds for both the English and the Amish communities. And so the house they're moving into is more of an English-style house. And so she's talking about like her discomfort with the house because it's far too big and has too many fancy things in it.
My understanding is that like every time a new technology comes along, because like the new like schism, and as some people use the technology and some don't.
Yeah, there's all sorts of lines that each community has to decide how to draw for itself. So it's okay to have electricity to your barn so that you can run the milkers for your cows, but it's not okay to run it to your house so your wife can have a washing machine. That's the one that drives me nuts. Yeah, Mennonites, Amish churches, it all depends on how you count, but general word is that there are about 40 separate divisions, clear divisions within Amish and plain dressing groups. And some of those divisions are just geographic, and some of them are, you know, this church couldn't decide if the bonnet strings should be tied or left loose, so they schismed. And then there were two churches, and then the bishop of one left, and they became, you know, Beachy Amish instead of Amish, or they became David Martin Mennonites up in Canada. There's the Mennonites and there's the David Martin Mennonites because David Martin thought they should leave. So they're really, you know, there could be a community where zippers are allowed. Generally, I think if you're plain dressing, you're probably not having a zipper. But it's really quite arbitrary.
Like the term beachy Amish just makes me think of Amish people hanging out on the beach.
There are some beach hangouts in this book.
Yeah, the epilogue of mine is on the beach. But I just think I really appreciated even, like, I had one of those moments where you're like, oh my gosh, our brains are so weird. We're like, it's like, oh, they're in Florida? There's Amish in Florida? Well, duh. Like, it's not like they're not required to only exist in Pennsylvania and Ohio and they're not allowed to be anywhere else. Like, those things where you're like, your brain is just stuck on these stereotypes that we have.
Yeah.
I should talk about my books so that we can get to the next section, probably. There was just a lot of interesting conversation there. So the collection of novellas I read is called An Amish Christmas Quilt. And the quilt is the common theme in all of the stories. The three authors are Jennifer Beckstrand, Charlotte Hubbard, and Kelly Long. It's a 2014 publication. And if you're interested in stories like a widow who has just given birth, plus carpenter and live nativity scene, or perhaps a courting couple who have feuding fathers, what will bring together this Christmas miracle? Or meddling matchmaking grandparents, a really deep and dangerous snowstorm, and the meaning of Christmas. But also, you know, useful cell phones and at least one reference to the hatchet, which made me happy in my little Canadian heart. So those were much more what I thought of as what I had come to expect from an Amish romance. But I also picked up Between You and Me by Susan Wigg, which is a 2018 publication. And rather than being known for her Amish romance, Susan Wigg is just a really big, like, contemporary romance, historical romance, and has gotten many accolades from the romance community for it. And so this particular story is... There's a man who lives in an Amish community, and he's not super happy to be in the Amish community, but he promised his brother on his dying, words was a promise to take care of his brother's kids. So he's taking care of his brother's kids, and the son, or the young boy, Jonah, is off to go help with some harvesting stuff. There's a terrible accident, and so they end up in the hospital rehabilitating Jonah, where he meets soon-to-be doctor Reese Powell, who's from an entirely different lifestyle. And so there's lots of, I will expose you to my lifestyle and things that we do in the city. And, you know, he gets to have her ride on her first horse kind of things. Lots of clash of cultures. Everybody's questioning, you know, what they've chosen to do with their lives and whether or not it's a good fit. I haven't actually finished it, but I presume since it's been tagged as a romance so many times that it does work out in the end. But it was interesting that this was the first Amish romance that I'd read that didn't take place in an Amish community completely. Normally that... Like, the ones that I'd read before, the entire story takes place within the Amish community, and the references to the English tourists are kind of like just outsiders on the periphery.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm always worried when there's an English-Amish relationship that it's going to end with the woman having to give up something that I don't want her to give up. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it might be more realistic to say that an English man would fall for an Amish woman rather the other way around, because I think the patriarchy is a real place and I can see modern men being okay with having an older idea of a domestic woman, and a little less likely that an Amish man would be understanding of a modern woman.
Mm.
So I hope that works out for them.
I mean, he seems like, obviously I don't know for sure, but in his heart, it seems like the only reason he's sticking around the Amish, because he isn't baptized or anything, is because of his, you know, his word. And so if there is some way that they manage to find an in-between solution, because I don't know, but the female character does not seem like the kind of person who's going to give up her medical career completely just because she likes a tall and handsome Amish dude.
Well, maybe they'll switch to a Mennonite church or something.
Maybe.
I mean, historically, that's what happens. If you leave the Amish, you tend to leave for just like a slightly different Anabaptist group. Though that's changing. It's a little, there's increasingly more of a jump from Amish to evangelical.
Hmm.
I wanted to mention, for the book that I read, one of the authors I said belongs to a beachy Amish Mennonite church. I will say she wrote an autobiography about like converting to the plain way of life, and several of the reviews are skeptical about her authenticity or the community that she's connected to. They don't use the word cultural appropriation, but they do accuse her of playing dress up. I don't know how legit that is, but that seems like a possibility. The other co-author, as far as I can tell, has no connection to Amish or Mennonite communities. She's an evangelical Christian. She's a mom blogger and the co-founder of an anti-abortion pregnancy center.
Oh, gosh.
And I think this is something that I've picked up a little bit of your conversations about it on Just Plain Wrong, but I think I have not hit an episode where you go in more depth, but like the evangelical bent of some of these books, which this might be a good segue into appeal factors actually. I think especially towards the end of the book I read, the evangelical stuff really kicked into high gear. There was suddenly like a lot more in-depth reflection about God and characters talking about spreading the good news and bringing people to God, and a minor character who is a reporter who's writing about the pie shop. So like coming in from outside of the community, who is literally like, this pie shop has convinced me that God exists. I feel God in this pie shop tonight.
That sounds about right.
Wait. Was it like the pineapple and vanilla pudding pie? Because like maybe they're like, yes, there is a God, and they are vengeful. They are angry at us.
No, it was that, I mean, she already was like very inspired by the pie shop, but then, spoilers for this book, the pie shop burns down in the second to last chapter, and the community comes together and rebuilds it. I really kind of resented how like the most of this book was so light and fluffy, and then like these, it had a few really traumatic turns in the last like two chapters, and it all works out okay, but like that's like when the evangelical stuff really kicks up, and the community comes together to rebuild the pie shop, which as somebody who like has someone close to me who went through a house fire, does not feel realistic that like the community rebuilt the pie shop that had a major fire in like 2 or 3 weeks. So I also just was personally resentful of that. But yeah, no, it was like, wow, if this is how God's people take care of each other, then God must exist. And so even though I mentioned that I did enjoy some of this as a romance, I don't think I would be comfortable recommending this book to a library patron looking for a romance novel unless they were really specifically looking for something with an evangelical bent.
Yeah, it is hard to uncouple the two. The majority of these books are written for an evangelical audience, and that's one of the biggest issues I have with accuracy in these books, is that sometimes you'll get an author who's really done their work and has, you know, all the right local names and the right understandings of how to wear your cape dress or what type of bonnet you wear, but all of those details don't count for much if the atmosphere isn't right. And plane groups are very communal. It's a community-minded thing that Bible studies and independent relationships with Jesus that you have in your heart is not a tenet of Amish theology. It's a communal faith, and it's very much acted out. So, I mean, unfortunately, the foundation of a lot of these books is appealing to a theology that's not accurate, even if the nuts and bolts are accurate.
It's so easy for me to forget, living in Canada, it's so easy for me to forget about evangelical Christians, to be totally honest. Like, religion in Canada is a different thing than religion in the United States.
I mean, we certainly have them here. It's, I think, yeah, there's certainly, yeah, differences between how that plays out in the US and Canada. But I guess we can move into appeal factors. It does seem like that evangelical Christianity is an appeal to writers of this genre to try to communicate that message. And I guess, must be to readers as well.
I have a question, and it's like, are there historical Amish romances?
There are less of them than current ones. Linda Byler has a series that's just started that's historical, set... We had a bit of argument on this in the podcast. We weren't sure if it was set just after World War I or just after World War II, because the book never specified. She also did one that was either pre or just post American Revolutionary War. And there are a few others. I will say that when there are historical Amish books, they tend to be just fiction with like bits of romance rather than romance in a historical setting.
That's interesting, because I remember listening to the conversation that you guys had with Valerie Weaver Zurcher, the author of Thrill of the Chaste, about nostalgia as like a driving factor of the appeal of these books. The idea of this simple life from like before times that is appealing, but that it is seems to be mostly depicted as something people are doing now, and not like nostalgia in the actual historical sense. It's more of a nostalgia for an imagined idea of what these communities are like, rather than a nostalgia for a specific place or time period.
I think someone mentioned Little House on the Prairie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the audience, if you were to look at a Venn diagram of like people who read Little House books as a kid and people who read like Anne of Green Gables as a kid, and then, you know, people who read or people who want religious fiction, you know, the cross section of all of that is Amish fiction.
Mm-hmm. Some of the things I like about the Amish romance is often like the food making parts or the gardening parts, the parts about being self-sufficient. So it kind of almost survivalist appeal to it. Like, I like survivalist type of literature as well. So I feel like that's part of it. And the romance is like, yeah, that's you know, it doesn't take up, not always, some of the times it does, but the balance is acceptable to me when I'm reading them. So I can see how that part appeals. The faith aspect, I can see if you'd like it to be more explicit within the romance, because I think modern or contemporary romance and a lot of current historical romance has a different flavor to it than what it might have had in earlier years in publishing. So having that gentle flavor, you know, mm-hmm. maybe some smooching, not so much sex on screen, it definitely probably appeals to a different reader than a lot of what is current in contemporary romance and current, even historical romance. I remember that reading Regency, there was so much more sex than I was expecting necessarily.
Yeah.
And much more progressive sex than I think we were expecting.
I mean, I'm not mad about the progressive sex.
No.
We're going to have lots of sex on the page. Let's have it have good sex rather than some of the things that I've read in the past.
Let's let everyone have some orgasms, you know? I was wondering if, Tilly, you had a sense, like, Megan, you mentioned Regency, and I feel like one of the appeals I was thinking about with that is making the relationship feel forbidden or introducing these, like, cultural and structural obstacles that sort of raise the stakes and make it more enticing. And I feel like for the ones that I've read where that applies, it feels like it does that with sexual tension, which was not the case in the book that I read at all. And it seems like it's generally not the case. But if there is an element of that that you've observed.
Yeah, I think there's something about the relationships. Certainly in some books, it can be forbidden or, you know, there's disapproval to counter if it's an English Amish relationship, or, you know, an Amish and an Amish from a person one district over. I think some of it is the idea, the appeal of being committed to someone in terms of their compatibility with your life and in terms of the way that your minds recognize each other. So you're forced to get to know someone's personality and views and to be seen as a person separate from sex, which I think has both good intentions and sometimes bad results, because sex is a part of who people are. But on the other hand, you're not reducing people to their sexual appeal. So I think it's a bit double-edged there, but I think some of the readers of the genre would say that it is feminist in that way, that it's about respecting usually a woman's, you know, agency. Of course, it doesn't usually give them much of a sex drive to reckon with or anything, but the argument has been made.
I think that's a good spot to end on. Yeah. Thank you so much again, Tilly, for joining us for this episode. It was so great to have your perspective. And listeners who want to hear more should check out Just Plain Wrong.
Thanks a lot for having me. It's been fun. And I've been learning a lot and laughing a lot listening to you guys, too. I've got lots of episodes to go yet, but it's been fun.
And Tilly, thank you so much for sharing a number of different materials with us to sort of give us some perspective and get us prepped for this. And we'll share a number of things in our show notes. All right. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. If you like the show, subscribe so you never miss an episode, and consider giving us a positive rating and or review. And if you've already done that, thank you very much.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the four in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclub4m, and find us on Twitter and on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to the things we mentioned in this episode, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book lists of titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or a title for us to read, or request a recommendation from us. We have a form. No promises on reading the suggestion, but we will give you a recommendation if you ask it of us.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, February 15th, when we'll be discussing what is a book?
Back to basics.
Yeah, this episode destroyed what I even think a book could possibly be.
Then on March 1st, we'll be discussing the genre of anthropology. That's our nonfiction episode.
Yay!
Yay.